The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC Live here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Shaq Hislop and Stevie Nicol here in the studio a little later on the program. Derek Ray will be here to give us all the fallout from the Clásica this weekend, but we kick things off in the Premier League. Everton against Arsenal was the Monday night game at Goodison Park. Both teams having somewhat questionable seasons so far. 28 minutes into this one. Should this have been a red card, Stevie?
100% it's a red card. Ben Godfrey absolutely knows what he's doing. If you watch here, he has a little look and then plants his foot on his face. I mean, I don't understand VAR not getting on that.
No card given. Just before the break, Richarlison scores. He's offside.
Yeah, it's a good header. Fantastic ball in. But, as you see, just off.
And then, to rub salt into the Everton fans' wounds, at the other end, Odegaard makes it 1-0.
Yeah, nice finish. Pretty much their first shot at goal. But what a great shot it is, just steers it in that bottom corner.
Into the second half we go. Once again, Richarlison finds the back of the net. Once again, he's offside.
Yeah, this one, an even tighter call. He is offside, but for Richarlison, but for a couple of inches, he would be two up.
Oh, the frustration from the Brazilian evident for all to see. But then, with 11 minutes to go, he scores, and it's onside.
And it's a fantastic finish. Great strike from Damari Gray, come back off the crossbar. Richarlison stays alive, and then look at the control of this header. Beautiful goal.
Speaking of controlled headers.
And Nketiah here with a great opportunity to restore Arsenal's advantage.
Great ball in by Saka, and Nketiah just goes in the far post, has a yard to hit and somehow messes it up.
If you're going to win a game,
yeah,
do it this way. Oh. What a strike from Damari Gray.
Fantastic strike. You can't let him come in on his right-hand side, but the ball actually just takes a little skip before he hits it.
Oh,
just sits up lovely for him, and he just smashes it home.
It wasn't over there, though, because Aubameyang, look at this for a chance. Wow, and it's well wide as well, isn't it?
It is. This is a great opportunity. Little slide rule ball across to him. It's hard to explain.
Goodness me, it's a huge win for Rafa Benitez. A lot of pressure on Everton going into this game, but coming from behind to take a 2-1 victory. Just a reminder how things then stand in the Premier League. After that result, Arsenal 7th. Now still a while off West Ham sitting in 4th. Meanwhile, you take a look at the bottom half of the table. Everton have moved up a lot considering where they started the day. They're now up to 12th. Julien Leroux is with us as well. Jules, obviously Everton kind of the story here, but with your Arsenal ways, I feel like we should start there. That was disappointing. It got worse as it went on, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really disappointing. Even once they took the lead, I don't think that was really deserved, because Everton, in the intensity that they put, in how aggressive they were, I thought they were the better team, and you kind of expected it because they were a Goodison, of course, and they needed a reaction after the bad run of results. But still, I expected Arsenal to get into the game quicker. And then once they took the lead, I thought they had to control it better, and they did that pretty well through the second half. But then eventually you let the pressure come in. If you look at the first goal, they should not lose the ball on the throw-in the way they did in their own half. And after that, the second goal, as we said, is incredible from Damari Gray. Pretty much the only good thing about Everton this season so far. But Nketiah could have restored the lead from Arsenal. Aubameyang should have saved the point, salvaged the point, which I don't think would have been deserved. But at least those chances were there. And overall, I just don't think it's good enough.
Overall from this game, Steve, your impression?
Neither side are particularly great.
Okay.
I mean, let's be honest. I said in the highlight there,
yeah,
the goal from Odegaard was their first shot on target. And I'm listening to the manager, and I'm listening to Odegaard after the game, and they're using words like dominate. You know, when we dominate, we have to do this and that. And I'm like, what game were they watching? Right. Seriously? I mean, yes, they were better in possession than Everton, but it never got anywhere, really. And it wasn't until the 60th minute that this game really came alive. And that was because of, pretty much, in my opinion, Richarlison. What a pest this guy is. Must be a nightmare to play against. He's not the most stylish thing to look at, but I'll tell you what, if there's a fight or you want to battle, you want him on your team. And it's his energy and his determination that I think was the deciding factor. Yes, Damari Gray hitting the crossbar for his goal and then scoring the winner. But I think without the drive from Richarlison, this team doesn't have too much else.
It was quite something considering what we saw in the Merseyside derby. You're 1-0 down. To have the character to show that there is a little bit of fight there in this Everton.
There is. And listen, it could have come off the rear so easily for Everton. Godfrey could have been sent off quite easily for the step early on. He was then booked in the 51st minute. How he avoided even a yellow card for that initial stamp is beyond me. But those are the thin margins. But to Stevie's point about this being or not being a very good game or neither of these teams being very good, Arsenal were right kind of getting themselves in conversation for top four. And I said this last week, I think when you see games like this, it highlights exactly how far the top three in the Premier League are away from everybody else. And right now it almost feels like somebody's going to qualify for the Champions League by default. Not that they're that good, not that they would finish fourth any other season, but somebody has to. And that's almost a disservice to everybody else. For Arsenal, as I say, things could have been better, but they didn't have the kind of fight that you saw from Everton, who needed it, given the run that they've been on, no wins in eight. And that will continue to be the criticism around Arsenal. When it's needed to roll your sleeves up, win ugly, get into a fist fight if need be, I'm just not sure that Arsenal have the people to do that.
Why can't they match that intensity that we saw? Why do we see these kind of displays from Arsenal, Jules? They can't be tired.
No, I don't think so. But they don't play in Europe. Neither do Everton. But they only have one game per week when there's not a double Premier League game week, for example. But I don't know. I think that midfield, especially, and Thomas Partey, is still a work in progress, to say kindly. He's not a six, that's for sure. But when he's asked to play like that, I'm not sure he brings enough to the table in terms of being aggressive, as you mentioned, that intensity, even sometimes the way he positions his body to receive the ball from a Ben White or a Gabriel. I'm not sure he's got that in his locker. And then you've got Xhaka, who was coming back from an injury, who hadn't played for the last few weeks. But whether that's Lokonga, Xhaka, Elneny, as we saw at Old Trafford with Partey, I'm not sure that's working yet. So they need to find that, because in the middle of the... And we always say, I know it's a bit cliche, but that's where you win those kind of games. And I don't think they've found the right formula yet.
What was interesting, Jules, just to kind of tie a bow on this game, and I don't know if you can confirm this, obviously, with your Arsenal inside knowledge, Stevie suggested that Arteta is the sort of person who would shave and 5 minutes later there would be stubble back on his face. Can we confirm this? That was your takeaway from the podcast.
So that's a good point. It's a really good theory from Stevie, who clearly has a lot of knowledge on the subject, more than me. I will inquire and come back to you.
Thank you very much, Homer Simpson-esque. Meanwhile, let's talk about the top three. Obviously, we've been talking about the title race, which hotted up this weekend. Chelsea dropping points, Liverpool and Manchester City moving above them in the table. According to the bookies, defending champions in City are big favourites. 2-1 on Liverpool, 3-1, Chelsea 5-1. Of course, one of the key players in City's success this season is Bernardo Silva. Pep Guardiola coming out and saying he is the best player in the league at the moment. He was the best two or three seasons ago. You have to go back to when we won with 98 points. Review the videos. You'll see the same player like this right now. We thought ahead of the show, well, should we have the discussion, is he really the best? And I thought everyone would just say, well, no, I think it's probably Mohamed Salah. But Jules, you're in the Pep Guardiola camp.
I am in a way. I think they're both the best player in the Premier League right now. I think it's too hard to separate them. And it's not so much about separating them, is that they're both on the same planet, which is another planet than everybody else in the Premier League. It's as simple as that, and they can just do keeper piece together if they want on that planet. but that's it. No one else is in that conversation. So we don't need to try to see who is Salah better than Bernardo or the other way around.
Yes, we do, Jules. We've been doing this for 11 years. This is what happens.
Okay.
Who would you pick right now?
Salah has been bossing this league for 5 years now, so this is nothing new. I think for Bernardo, I picked Bernardo because in the summer, he was on the market. He was for sale. City were trying to clearly offloading to everyone and anyone in Europe. Atletico Madrid, PSG, in Italy, literally anywhere. He stayed on the bench for the first game at Spurs when they lost. And yet, for him to have turned things around so brilliantly, really, and to now become not maybe just the Premier League best player, but City's best player, City's most indispensable player. They just cannot do without him, to the point that I'm not sure where De Bruyne will fit when he comes back. I think that deserves a lot of credit, and that, just for that, I would pick Bernardo.
Jules saying no question. Bernardo said we're on a different planet to Mohamed Salah.
Isn't it amazing? Because everything Jules said there is correct about how he's come back. But my argument would be, yes, he's come back, and it does take ability and mental toughness and all these good things to get back to the position where you're being talked about as the best player in the Premier League. But surely, to be doing it for 5 years and still doing it should take you over the line. So it's amazing how Jules can think one way and I'm thinking for a similar type of reason the other way. But the other thing is as well, you take Salah out of Liverpool, Liverpool don't have the points. You take Silva out of City, they might still have the same points.
Who are you going for here, Shank?
I'm leading Mo Salah, you know. But in all honesty, Jules' first answer is the right one. That's an unfair question, Dan. Right. You shouldn't be asking that question of us. What? That's too hard. That's too hard a decision to make.
I haven't brought a Ballon d'Or, have I? I haven't brought anything like that. It's quite simple. If we're in the playground at the moment, who's your first pick?
Somehow we end up on another planet.
Is your first pick Salah or is it Bernardo Silva? Only on what we've seen this season.
My first pick will continue to be Mohamed Salah, yes.
Steve, you got a point, Jules.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, you're being cheeky, but I said Salah has been bossing this league for 5 years, and of course you can go with Salah. I don't think there's a debate. He's been decisive in every game. When he doesn't score, he assists for the Origi goal, for example, at the weekend. So Salah, without problem, is the Premier League boss. I just like the Bernardo story. I like what he brings, and I disagree with Stevie. I don't think that City would have as many points as they have now without the performances from Bernardo this season. Even if they have such a big squad and a lot of depth and etc., he's been so good for them that I don't think they would be in that position had he not played at all this season, for example, which is the same to Salah for Liverpool.
City's lead at the top of the table, of course, would be a bigger margin if it wasn't for Diego Origi coming off the bench and scoring that winner against the Wolves. This is a man who just keeps doing it, it seems, in these key moments. Look at this for an unnecessarily stat for you, Steve. The most go-ahead goals after 85 minutes. He scored three in the last four seasons. You've been heavily critical of Diego Origi in the past.
I've been heavily critical because I find it strange why a guy of, 25, 24, seems to be happy being a super sub. My shrapnel cluttered brain can't figure out how, at such a young age, you know, where you should be kicking in the best years of your career, that you're happy to sit on the bench. I know it's Liverpool. And OK, you got your Champions League winning medal, you got your Premier League winning medal, but at the end of the day, you're a sub. I personally knew the first ever super sub, David Fairclough, and he absolutely hated the tag. Hated it. It wasn't until he finished playing that he kind of got used to it. It was notoriety and he accepted it. But he wanted to be a player. He didn't want to be a super sub. Seems to me, Origi's happy to be a super sub.
Do moments like that not make it all worth it, though? All that time on the bench, coming on and making that effect and putting in that performance and winning the points?
I don't think so. Because, Dan, if you're happy at his age to sit on the bench,
right,
You're not sitting on the bench moaning and groaning and part of the sour grapes gang because you're not getting a game. He's sat on the bench, he's usually got a smile on his face, he's warming up, he's talking to his mates, and then he comes on, he scores his goal. So it seems like he's quite happy. So I don't think the energy that he gets from scoring these goals should not cover up the amount of time he sits on his backside on the bench, in my opinion.
What do you think, Shane?
I'm with Stevie. It is odd. It is really odd, especially when you're of the mindset that I am, and quite clearly Steve is, where you want to play, and if you want, you want to play at the highest level that you can, but most importantly, you want to play. To see Origi, even with the successes, even with all the kind of fanfare that comes when he does score big goals, it's odd. To Stevie's point, I'll point to Tony Warner at Liverpool back in the day, who just seemed happy to be David James's number two for far longer than Origi has been a sub for Liverpool himself. Those mindsets just are foreign to me, so I can't, you know, I won't pass judgment because it makes no sense.
Our first team will be back for extra time, Jules Shacker and Stevie, to answer your tweets. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It is Borussia Dortmund against Bayern München, Der Klassiker. There's Julian Brandt finding a pocket of space, and Brandt has put it away for Borussia Dortmund. What a start! And that's the way to do it for the Schwarz-Gelben. Now they have to pay attention at the back, certainly, Hummels and company. And Lewandowski! That's what he does just about every time. It's 1-1. Touch of pinball inside the box, it's Coman! Bayern hit the front. Kingsley Coman jumps for joy.
You have to say that defending in these areas is killing Dortmund.
What can they conjure this time? It just missed out. And Erling Haaland! There's the equaliser. There's the inspiration Dortmund were looking for right at the start of the second half. And it had to be Erling Haaland. And Haaland guiding it on, and was there a foul there? Well, the referee was right up with play. Felix Zweier saw no transgression, but you be the judge.
You know, you give a referee that's, you know, match fixed before the biggest game in Germany, what do you expect?
I'm just checking here, Felix Zweier.
Well, if the referee gives a penalty here, then Mats Hummels is definitely the most tragic person on the field today.
Now he's about to deliver the verdict, which is penalty! Penalty, handball against Hummels. Huge moment, Lewandowski against his former club, and in it goes for Bayern. They've regained the lead. It's another Bayern victory in Der Klassiker, a Saturday night thriller here at the Signal Iduna Park.
It was a brilliant match, wasn't it? Bayern Munich in the end taking all 3 points to extend their lead to 4 at the top of the table. But it was those comments from Jude Bellingham after the game that has certainly gone global. Accusations of bias from the referee. Hans-Joachim Watzke came out, the Borussia Dortmund chief executive, saying that was a highly emotional situation. This is on Bellingham's comments. He was very disappointed and only stated known facts. Well, let's welcome in the voice of the Bundesliga here on ESPN. Derek Ray joins us. Derek, how is all of this, kind of the refereeing situation in particular, how is this playing out in Germany and what sort of punishment could Bellingham face?
Well, it's still playing out, Dan. It's still a big story and likely to be for a few days to come. I think that it took everybody by surprise what Jude Bellingham said. Now, obviously, it was news to him that there was a story involving Felix Zweier on the match-fixing front many years ago. Those of us who've covered German football for a long time have known about this story. It seems that an awful lot of people have just discovered this, and we could get into the whys and why nots. But regarding Jude Bellingham, I think that we have to wait and see. There's an investigation that's been launched by the DFB, the German FA, into his comments. They've asked for a written explanation as to why he made those comments to Scandinavian TV. And it could well be that the authorities in Germany also want to have a look, because there is such a thing as defamation of character. And if you insinuate, if you talk about match fixing, if you talk about a referee who in the past has indulged in match fixing, the words that Jude Bellingham used, then you could argue that you are making the insinuation that, in this case, there was match fixing going on, which I think most of us would say, no, absolutely wasn't going on. And if you look at what happened in the course of the game, yeah, there were maybe some controversial decisions, but I think, Jude Bellingham is probably going to regret what he said.
Now, the German FA, I don't think, helped their officials out that much, Derek, because it took them 24 hours to come out and say, well, for that Borussia Dortmund penalty call, even if they went to the monitor, it wouldn't have been given because Erling Haaland was offside in the build-up. Now, Archie mentioned this yesterday. I was like, well, surely that would have just kind of annulled everything. It would have just calmed everybody down and we wouldn't have been in this situation. He said no, because that was a number of incidents that we saw in which Borussia Dortmund felt persecuted. That's a little bit... it's a bit easy for Dortmund to say, isn't it? I don't think anyone who watched that match thought, oh my goodness, this ref is very much pro-Munich and very much against Borussia Dortmund. Or am I wrong?
Well, I didn't feel that way. As I said, I think there were debatable decisions, but not wrong decisions in the game. Now, I've spoken to a host of Dortmund fans since that match, and they feel aggrieved. And if it's your team, you probably do. I mean, it's natural as a football fan. You see a decision that you might think is 50-50 or 60-40, and it goes against your team, you get quite worked up. And there were two big penalty decisions in the game. I happen to think that it was correct, and the DFB have backed up Felix Zweier, talking about the Hummers handball. And the other one, well, as you said, it's a moot point now, and it would have been very helpful to Felix Zweier if he'd had that information, because he gave a number of interviews, and that's transparency for you. In many countries, referees don't give interviews after the games to explain their decisions, but he did, and he didn't make reference to the offside with Haaland because, of course, he didn't know about it. But it is an absolute fact that if that had gone to VAR, it didn't, that other penalty decision, that penalty claim, had it gone to VAR, it would have been a moot point because there was offside against Haaland.
Archie and Steve, you were butting heads yesterday about that Hummels handball, Derek. You felt it was the right decision. Are there many in Germany feel that it wasn't a handball?
Well, again, you can sort of go back and forth on it. The more you look at it, the more you see that, yeah, there was handball, which the referee picked up to begin with. And look at that position of the arm. Is that a natural position? Now, Dortmund have tried to argue that there were all sorts of factors at play, that Thomas Müller was putting off Mats Hummels, that he was stumbling, and therefore he's maybe allowed to have his arm in that position. But, you know, I think that most referees nowadays would give that. And, you know, you could also say it was how VAR is supposed to be used. Again, we come back to the fact that if you're a Dortmund fan, you don't like it. I wouldn't like it if it were my team. But I don't think you can say that the referee got that hopelessly wrong.
It's a slight shame that we've been talking about officials for the last 48 hours, which has maybe overshadowed what was a cracking game and a great advert for the Bundesliga, Derek.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, by the way, because, yeah, we have been talking for the most part about these decisions, about these big incidents, and it's natural to do that. But this was maybe the best Dortmund-Bayern game I can remember in 5 or 6 years. Certainly up there with the very best matches involving these two sides, and it was gripping. And I do think, by the way, that in the first half especially, Zweier, the referee, actually contributed to that. There were only three fouls, and he let quite a lot go, even in the second half. And both teams really went for it. And funnily enough, I never really had the feeling that Bayern were going to lose, even though Dortmund came back really strongly, that goal that we saw from Erling Haaland. But a lot of players at the peak of their powers. I will say as well, a lot of mistakes, and we do sometimes need mistakes in a big game to add to the entertainment value. But this had everything. It was just drama, heaps on drama.
Yeah, lots of drama right across the Bundesliga this weekend. Plenty of goals. In fact, I think it was the most for 33 years, Derek. However, big story certainly here in the States, Jesse Marsch being let go at Leipzig. Now, this is interesting. This is from the Bill column that you quoted on Twitter. For a long time, Marsch had stopped being convinced by himself. Exactly twice in the autumn, he conveyed doubts to the bosses as to whether he was the right man. How is he supposed to convince a team? This seems quite the anomaly when it comes to management, Derek, that you're vocally doubting yourself.
Well, this all came from Oliver Minzlaff, who's the head man at Leipzig, who gave an interview to Sport 1, our colleagues at Sport 1, yesterday. And he said something interesting. He said that twice after match days 7 and 10, Jesse Marsch went to the club bosses and posed the question, am I the right man for this job? Am I the right fit for this job? Now, we haven't heard from Jesse Marsch on this to back up what was said, but that would have been after games against Bochum. They won it 3-0 with three late-ish goals, and against Frankfurt when they conceded a goal right at the end. So this is where that column came from Christian Kunast of Bild-Zeitung that you showed. It's a curious one. I think that in the final analysis, we will probably say that, quite simply, Jesse Marsch under-delivered as coach of Leipzig. He came in with tremendous build-up, big fanfare, especially from people in the USA who naturally wanted him to do well. I think that while the squad was weakened a little bit, this is still a squad that should be a top-four squad. And to be honest, after 14 matches, when you're in 11th place, and you've got teams like Bochum who are under-resourced compared to Leipzig, ahead of RB Leipzig, then you do have to ask questions. Three defeats in a row, no away wins, just too many negatives. Maybe not helped by the fact that being in this almost impossible Champions League group, but that squad, as I said, even though they've lost Upamecano, Konate, Zabica, and of course Julian Nagelsmann, maybe it shows how good a coach he is. With all those absentees, yes, it was difficult, but they shouldn't be 11th. Something was clearly wrong. And, you know, according to Leipzig, it was a stylistic thing. The players weren't prepared to go back in time to the old power football, the old style that they used to play, because Nagelsmann had introduced this more possession-based style.
It's extraordinary. It's very honest from Jesse Marsch. If you're going to your boss and saying, I'm not sure if I'm the right man for the job.
Well, that was one of the two things that stuck out. Sometimes you can be too honest, but you've got to say, when you go to your boss and come out with a statement like that, you're basically putting your head on a platter. Because if I'm a boss and the team's struggling badly, they're nowhere near where they should be, and the guy in charge comes to me and says, I'm not quite sure I'm the right guy for the job, then it's one of them. Phew. Right. It takes all the pressure off them. It's dead simple. They just turn around to each other on the board and say, you know what, we'll give it two or three games. Let's see if he can turn it around. And if he doesn't, he's already come and told us himself. I mean, it's no surprise that the first thing that they say is that he came and told us. I mean, that's because that's what you would do.
Why would you do that, though, as a manager? Because Jesse Marsch got experience. He knows that nothing good can come of that. What does he expect to happen?
I disagree with the experience, but, you know, do you think Mourinho would do that, or Benitez, or any? I mean, nobody does that. That's being naive, in my opinion. I think because of the way Jesse's come through the system, it's probably more of a family thing, he thinks.
Right.
You know, people like Mourinho know it's cutthroat. He knows it's either them or me. Somebody's getting that. Whereas Jesse, because he's probably come through the Red Bull system, feels like a family. It's kind of a thing you would do with your brothers and sisters or whatever, and be honest and be nice. Football, unfortunately, at the highest level, is not that. And that's why I think a lot of it was just inexperience.
I don't get it. I'll be really honest with you. I'm struggling to explain it. Listen, we've sat here over the years and we've seen coaches go through 23 game losing spells and give interviews and say they're the only ones who can turn this around. I whether we believe them or not is aside from the question. They have to believe it themselves. To be able to say that out loud, I think shows a frailty that goes way beyond just honesty. And for example, use my managers like Jose Mourinho, etc. I remember talking to Sir Alex Ferguson a few years ago and asking him, because famously, Sir Alex was one FA Cup tie away from losing his job.
Yeah, it was Robbins, wasn't it?
And I asked him about that. I said, so what do you think would have happened if he had lost that tie? It's like, I'd have just done exactly as I did with Manchester United with another club, because I believed in what I was doing. I believed in how to do it. That is in total contrast to what this article is suggesting about Jesse Marsh and his approach. There is no safety net for that kind of honesty, if you want to put it that way, or frailty is the way I see it.
Who next for Leipzig then, Derek?
Well, what's interesting is, and I do find this all very confusing, the lead candidate has been widely reported to be Holger Schmidt of PSV in the Netherlands, of course well-known in Germany, mostly for his time with Leverkusen. It has emerged today that they're not going to get Holger Schmidt because he's under contract until 2022. He doesn't want to break that contract, even though there is interest from Leipzig. But here's the thing. Holger Schmidt is very much the same style as Jesse Marsh. So it's that power-pressing approach, that sort of wild style almost. Now, if the problem is that the style of Jesse Marsh wasn't a fit because of what Nagelsmann did, why would you then go for another coach who's exactly like that? So there's something here that doesn't fit. And just to finish the point that Xhaka and Stevie were talking about there, I would love to hear what Jesse Marsh has to say about this, because it's quite unusual for a club boss, for the boss of the coach, if you like, to come out and betray the fact that the coach has come to him or to them twice and expressed doubts. So if it's not Schmidt, then some of the other names being mentioned, Domenico Tedesco, former Schalke coach amongst other clubs, worked in Russia. He's available, so they could get him without having to worry about a contract. Edin Terzic, who filled in Dortmund last season, did very well, won the cup for them. He's the technical director at Dortmund now, but very committed to Dortmund. I'm not sure they could get him. And some fans are suggesting, well, Adi Hütter at Gladbach, they lost 6-0 yesterday. They're in a bit of a mini crisis. You know, could he leave? And he has an RB background as well. Would that be a good fit? Max Eberl at Gladbach says, no, we're sticking with Adi Hütter. He's part of the furniture here in terms of our way of thinking. So I think what they've done is they've bought themselves a bit of time between now and Christmas. You've got 3 games left until the Christmas break. That's usually when a new person comes in. And who knows, somebody might get sacked between now and then who would attract the attention of Oliver Minzlaff and the other decision makers at Leipzig. Fascinating times there.
Indeed, Derek Ray, as always, thank you very much. Just other news regarding American coaches in Europe, and of course it broke today that Chris Armas will be joining Manchester United and linking up with Ralf Rangnick, of course recently fired by Toronto. For a lot more on that story and reflection on those two conference finals, be sure to check out the latest edition of Football Americas here on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Meanwhile, let's take you back to what happened in France this weekend. Lens taking on a PSG. Kaylor Navas having an absolute shocker. Your boy, Shank.
Yeah. Listen, it's hard to explain for a goalkeeper of his quality, other than to say it happens sometimes.
Now, they were talking about the battle between Donnarumma and Kaylor Navas on Italian football TV. How do I know this?
Oof, somebody must have told you.
Well, Gab was tweeting about this on Saturday night because they were discussing the goalkeeping situation at PSG and whether players preferred Navas or Donnarumma. Leonardo then texted in to the show to say the players had absolutely no preference and that Pochettino decides who plays game after game. Shaka, isn't it just Donnarumma's better than Navas? Shouldn't that just be it?
Well, it should be either Donnarumma better than Navas or Navas better than Donnarumma. It shouldn't be we'll decide, we'll make an on-the-spot decision. That serves neither goalkeeper better. Listen, you know how strongly I feel about Keylor Navas, similarly about Donnarumma. I had a similar situation at Newcastle, where it was me and Pavel Sinicek as the two goalkeepers. Not really rings the same as Donnarumma and Keylor Navas.
Sell it, Shaq. Come on. Doubt yourself.
Well, the wages were a little different.
Well, a whole lot different. But Kevin Keegan had the same approach that, not kind of changing every week, but there was no established number one. And that served neither me nor Pav better because you were nervous about making mistakes in games. You were nervy about making mistakes even in training. And as a result, You both end up playing within yourselves. And that is no good to anybody, to the goalkeepers or to the team itself. Now,
who's better, Shane?
I'm still leaning Keylor Navas.
Really?
Well, listen, Donnarumma's had an incredible, 6 months, 8 months? No question. But Keylor Navas has proven himself time and time again at this level. Possession is 9/10 of the law, is the old cliche. I don't think that until this mistake, which you can probably blame at the rotation, until this mistake, Keylor Navas has done nothing to be out of the team. And that, for me, is why I will continue to lean Keylor Navas.
What are they saying in France, Jules?
I mean, it's a big debate since the day Gigi Donnarumma signed at the club, because if there was one position really where they didn't need anyone, because Navas had been so good since arriving from Real Madrid, that was in goalkeeper, as a goalkeeper. So this is a debate that we've had in France since day one. Like I said, everybody is jumping in. Of course, the Leonardo story has come to France as well. There's also, let's not forget, something very important is Navas' position within the dressing room, within the South American clan, which is very important, I think, for the balance of the dressing room. Because I think if you start dropping Navas and not rotating anymore, there will be a lot of unhappy players in that dressing room, which is something that Pochettino doesn't want. Pochettino, by the way, who's very close to Navas as well. So there's a lot of geopolitics, almost as much as all the sporting side of it, that comes in consideration. And I don't know. I can see why they signed Donnarumma. It's a great market opportunity. He's one for the future. He's obviously 14 years younger than Navas, or 13 years younger. I've got no problems. But on the other hand, we knew this was going to be a problem, an issue at some point, and it clearly is.
I don't understand Pochettino, particularly with Pochettino being a centre-back, because as a defender, you want to have the same keeper in.
Right.
Because you know everything. You know where he's going to be without even looking. You understand where his strengths and weaknesses are. If you're changing all the time, then you're constantly having to think and you're constantly having to look. And that's detrimental to every team. And so I would have thought Pochettino would have known that, because I would be shocked if he was playing, he wanted a different goalie in every time he stepped on the field. So again, it's kind of going back to Poch. Poch needs to stand up and say, look, either Donnarumma's your goalie or Keylor Navas is your goalie. You've got to make your mind up. You've got to make some tough decisions. But clearly, it doesn't seem as though he's going to do that.
One of many problems, it seems, for PSG at the moment. You listen to the Gab and Jules podcast, the latest one, Jules. You sounded so down and depressed. It wasn't normally the uplifting Julien Laurent that we're used to.
No, and wait until you read my piece on the website as well, because it's even more embarrassing.
I don't think I can face that, Jules.
I despair even more. I mean, I don't know. This is the most talented squad they've ever had, that PSG has ever had in its whole history, but especially since the Qatari took over 10 years ago. And yet, this is the worst team on the pitch, the worst performances. There's just nothing. There's nothing collectively. There's no direction. You can't see any clear identity. And we go back to the same thing. There's no patterns of play. Maybe it's hard to put something in, like a style in place or a game in place when you've got Neymar, Mbappe and Messi, knowing that they don't defend, etc. But still with the ball, even just focus on the ball. I don't care about pressing or counter-pressing or defending or trailing back or anything. Just think with the ball. With the ball, this is a team that should be playing so much better, being able to build from the back, to beat the press, which they can't even do against teams like Angers and Strasbourg and Nantes and Lens at the weekend. They were second best against Lens and somehow rescued the point. This is odd. This is something they're good at, rescuing a point or a win in the last 10 minutes of the game. They've done that more than anybody else in the Big Five League, but I don't care. I want them to play better, and right now they don't. And it's not just Pochettino's fault, but he's mostly to blame as well for the lack of identity.
More of that sort of rhetoric on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. And apparently there's an article to come as well to cheer us all up as well. So keep an eye on that over on the website. Meanwhile, in the last round of matches now are the group stages of the Champions League. All eyes will be on Group B tomorrow. We know that Liverpool are through top. They've got no problem. But then it could be Porto, Milan or Atletico Madrid. One of those will be joining Liverpool in the next round. It's very much all to play for. I asked for your predictions as to who would make it through. There are so many different permutations, but Shaka and Stevie believe that it will be Porto who advance. Meanwhile, Jules has gone slightly different and is going for Milan to make it into second. Meanwhile, in Group D, it's all about who's going to finish first. We know it will be either Real Madrid or Inter Milan. Those two teams facing off in the Spanish capital, Real Madrid, without Karim Benzema. A draw, though, would be enough for Carlo Ancelotti's side. And according to our predictions, yep. Wow. You both think Inter are going to win?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
No Benzema. I think it's a coming in factor.
Wow. Jules, meanwhile, going for a draw, which would be enough for Madrid. But according to Shaka and Stevie, it'll both Inter finishing top of that group. Well, of course, we'll be looking back at those matches and looking ahead to the final games in the Champions League group stages on the next edition of the show. Full programme of La Liga matches this weekend. Certainly the standout ties on Sunday, isn't it? Real Madrid taking on Atleti, the first derby of the season. All these games live on ESPN+. Coverage of that big match, by the way, starts at 2:30 Eastern. Well, speaking of La Liga, be sure to head over to our website to find out about a great competition, La Liga Ultimate Challenge. You could win La Liga gear, and there's also a chance to win a trip to attend Valencia against Barcelona in February. Just take part in one or all three of our six video challenges to test your passion for La Liga. They include posting a photo on Twitter in your favorite La Liga team's kit or imitating your favorite player's goal celebration. The first challenge is live and available now. Rules and regulations are on the website.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Baiso, robbed by Ter Aronson, Tyler's Magno, for all the brave resistance of Philadelphia, it is New York City through their teenage Brazilian who are within minutes of a first ever appearance in MLS Cup.
have to tip your cap to Ronnie Dyla. There was a real question whether or not this team would ever be in the playoffs. And they're heading to Portland in MLS Cup 21.
This team, they don't stop. They keep on going. And now we are in the final. So we're going to be more ready then.
But after seven seasons of their existence, a first trophy for New York City FC.
Brilliant celebrations there as NYCFC set up MLS Cup against Portland Timbers. That game is live next Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern on ABC. We're a long way away from the FA Cup final. The second round, of course, played its final game today. Boreham Wood against St Albans, 25 minutes into this one. Josh Rees with the goal to make it 1-0.
Well, it's a horrible attempt at a clear. But Josh Rees doesn't care. He just smashes it home.
4 minutes into the second half, the host would make it 2-0. Rees with a header.
It's a very good header. We'll cross that. Just kind of hung up in the air for him to attack.
3-0 in the 65th minute, thanks to this from Gus Mafuta.
Yeah, he attacks it well, right off the mitt of the bat. Look at this. This was going nowhere other than in the back of the net.
And then with 9 minutes to go, a fourth would come. Long ball over the top. And Adrian Clifton is there to make it four. Boreham Wood then through to the next round. The third round draw was made today. Some notable ties. Chelsea, Chesterfield, Leicester defending champions, of course, take on Watford. Liverpool, Shrewsbury Town. United will take on Villa. Forest, Arsenal, Swindon Town, City. Spurs against Morecambe. And it's West Ham against Leeds United. All those games will be available on ESPN+. Meanwhile, yesterday saw the final of the Women's FA Cup, Arsenal taking on Chelsea just 3 minutes into this one. And it would be Chelsea who would take the lead at Wembley. Fran Kirby getting in behind to make it 1-0.
Shows a lot of composure there, Kirby. One-on-one with the keeper.
Chelsea dominated this game. It should have been a lot more than what it was in the end. The second coming in the 57th minute. Sam Kerr with a goal here.
It's a nice ball in the channel to pick out Sam Kerr. One-on-one with the defender who doesn't get close enough. Cuts it back against the green in at that near post.
Sam Kerr would get her second and the pick of the goals here. And there's her little chip.
Oh.
Nice.
That's a really nice finish.
She's right, by the way.
Yeah, fantastic finish. Chelsea then very much deserving the FA Cup trophy as they are your 2021 winners. And that takes them now to three. Still a long way off Arsenal. We're sitting on 14. Chelsea, though, aren't they looking good this season? Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. Jules is back with us. Shaka and Stevie with me as well to answer your tweets. Stay with us. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. Shaka's here, as is Jules. Stevie's tired. He was up at 8 a.m. to go to the dentist this morning.
I can't remember the last time I was up at 8 a.m. Definitely felt strange.
How was that? Was it exciting?
Were the dentist?
Yeah, we have, awful. Was the dentist? Did you get a free toothbrush? Tell you to floss
lollipop,
more?
Tell you what. Did you get a lollipop, anything?
Tell you what, they had to chisel my hands off the chair. I was like, I was holding on for
you're scared. You're scared of the dentist?
Scared. Oh, I hate it. Oh.
What do you hate about it?
When I was a kid, I had the worst dentist ever. I wouldn't mention his name.
Right.
Because he was an uncle of a friend of mine.
Okay. Is he still alive? I don't know.
He probably isn't, but...
Right.
Surely things have moved on.
You won't remember. You know when you were, like, getting a tooth out?
Right.
You got gas.
Yes.
I mean, gas. Think about it.
Right.
Sitting back in the chair and somebody gassing you. Like, who came up with that? What a butcher it was.
Oh, wow. But is this must be a nicer dentist.
Yeah, but I just...
The music wasn't good either at the dentist, though.
You're really traumatized.
What was the music?
What was all that Christmas nonsense?
Oh, Christmas music.
Seriously.
Oh, goodness.
Away, you go.
Stupid Christmas music. People saying happy holiday.
Everybody being happy, singing songs.
Enough of that.
Nobody needs that.
Right. Let's talk some soccer. Should Manchester United fans consider Pogba gone, Jules?
Ooh.
Well, I don't think so. He hasn't made his mind up. I think Rangnick arriving, and we will see the direction that the team is taking with him, and that Paul is going to come back to full fitness quite soon now and be involved, I suspect, in that team. And then I think that will help him deciding if he wants to stay, if the club wants him to stay, if Rangnick wants him to stay. And we know that Rangnick will have a big say on who stays, who goes, who comes. So I think that would play a big part in it. But I don't think right now, I mean, there's a lot of United fans who want him gone, some who want him to stay. But him, I still think that very much a lot is still in the air, basically.
Who was your footballing hero growing up, Jules? And did you ever get to meet them?
Mm.
So I liked David Ginola a lot when I was a kid.
Oh, and then Frank will be really angry.
We even worked together. Yeah, but Frank was like not playing for PSG to start with, and then he was playing for Marseille. So that was wrong. That was not the right. But yeah, I have to say the PSG players, George Weah, David Ginola especially, and then someone like Alain Roche. I liked them all. But Francescoli was a big. I was a big fan of Francescoli as well.
They always say never meet your heroes. Was there anyone that you met you were like, oh, you've disappointed me in life?
It was interesting, to put it that way, to work with David Ginola, for sure.
Shaka, what about you? Who did you
meet? Few. Alex Williams, black goalkeeper for Manchester City back in the day.
Right.
Never met him, but I was actually on a Zoom call with him a few weeks ago. Ray Clements, who I worked with when I got called up to the England team. So those two and, goodness me, no names.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You're right, Jack. What's happened?
Mario Kempes, good Lord. Mario Kempes was kind of... So the 78 World Cup, I was 9 years old.
Okay.
And that was kind of the first World Cup that I really knew what was going on and took everything in. And, of course, Kempes, they won it, leading scorer, played blah, blah, blah. And then met him first day when I came into ESPN. That was surreal.
And talk about unassuming. Mario Kempes, the most unassuming.
Unbelievably unassuming. Unbelievable. Kicking penalties with Mario Kempes in the airport in South Africa in 2010.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just typical Mario. I mean, it is unbelievable.
Did you save any?
May have done.
Stephen, what about you?
One you probably won't have heard of. Willie Henderson played for Rangers. I was a Rangers fan.
Right.
But Willie Henderson and George Best.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, I never got to meet Willie Henderson.
Okay.
But I met George.
Did you have a drink with George Best?
I didn't have a conversation. George didn't say a lot.
Right.
I'm not sure whether it was because he was just very shy.
Okay.
Or whether he maybe had one too many. But he never said a word. I was actually on the same table as him. It was in Dubai. We played Celtic in Dubai.
Right.
And he was given the Man of the Match award out, which he gave to me. Thank you very much.
Wow, Stevie.
And then we went to the after-dinner dinner. And I was sat at the same table. I was like, unbelievable. But he never spoke.
Mm. Wow.
He never spoke.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go. Jules, which front three would you prefer? Lewandowski, Salah and Vinicius Jr. Or Messi, Mbappe and Neymar?
He's really? All depressed, Jules, already. Really? Already depressed.
I mean, that's easy, Jules. Come on.
It's easy.
You know, I would rather Dan Thomas, Thibaut Nicolas and Julien Laurence front three, because Xhaka can't play up top.
That
would be my choice.
I'm sorry,
you did Xhaka sure. Before Dan. I'm sorry. I can't go all over.
I think I'm contractually obliged to take anything with Kylian Mbappe in it. So of course I will go for the Neymar, Mbappe and Messi from three. Thank you very much.
Hold on a minute. You just said
you just said you have Dan and before Mbappe.
We've just finished the show, right? We've just finished the show, and you've annihilated PSG, which, guess what? Mbappe, Neymar and Messi are a big part of. Mm-hmm. You said there's no patterns, there's no playing together, there's no nothing. So, and then you're going to turn
it's
down
like
Lewandowski, Salah and Vinicius.
Random kids, or your three own children. I have to go with my children, even if they're not as good as the other three kids from the down the road.
Who are you having, Shank?
Of my children?
No, we're not talking about your children.
Oh, I was about to say it. I'd have three down the street, please. I'm having the first three.
Yeah?
Lewandowski, Salah, Vinicius. I have no contractual obligations to Mbappe.
That bottom three's shown us nothing.
Right.
Nothing. So you can't go wrong if you choose the other three because you've got nothing from
the bottom three should be the better three.
Right.
But we've seen nothing of them together.
Right, so we're taking the first three?
Yeah.
Yes.
Even though they're Jules' children.
Take somebody else's children, Jules.
Eclectic mix of extra time questions today. Shaka, why does Neil call himself Shaka?
My mother always wanted to name her first boy child Neil.
Right.
Here I am. My father believed that we should have African names to reflect our heritage. So Shaka is actually my second name. But my father would only call me Shaka, so...
So what does Shaka mean?
Shaka is after the South African Zulu king.
Oh, big time.
A little blue blood in the veins.
that's how I rose, Stephen.
So does your mother call you Neil? Does anyone
Nobody
call you
calls
Neil?
Me Neil?
No one calls you Neil?
Nope.
Even when you were naughty, it wasn't a Neil wouldn't be brought out.
No, it wouldn't, no.
Seeing that Shaka is huge and has massive hands, does he think he could have made it as a basketball player? Also, can he dunk a basketball? I've seen Shaka play basketball.
Hold on, let me tell my own story, please.
We've had that question before, I'm sure.
I'm a very good basketball player, I'll have everyone know. I missed my calling by becoming a goalkeeper.
Shaka, you're terrible.
No, that's not true
at all.
That's not true at all.
Have you seen him?
Pardon? Yeah.
I'm very good, Stephen.
We went on a cruise together and there was a basketball court and he had to play against like other people on the cruise. And you kind of think, look at Shaka, athletic, tall, he'd be great. Missed everything all the time.
It's very wavy, Steve. The seas were rough. The seas were rough, Steve.
I've heard you recently.
The seas were rough.
On other subjects.
Yeah.
So it was a bit choppy that day.
Can you dunk a basketball?
But not anymore.
Not anymore?
I used to be able to.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What, when you were like a toddler and you had one of those?
No, so when I was at university, the soccer team, we actually entered a team into the Intramural Basketball League. So we used to play. We used to play like in the off season. I could have dunked pretty easily if I missed this for myself.
How high is a basketball net?
11 foot.
All right, forget that.
Apparently it's 10 feet, not 11.
Well, I used to dunk in an 11.
Yeah, 10, really?
I used to dunk in an 11.
Are you telling me you play basketball? You don't know
how high. Maybe that's what happened on the cruise. I was aiming at the 11 foot.
Maybe that was it.
What height were the goalposts? What height was the
9 foot.
Yeah, there you go.
Jules, what's your basketball skills like?
Very good, actually. Really good.
Oh, yeah. Do you even take children like mine?
The children are playing really well. Better than yours, that's for sure. That's for sure.
My children are better than your children.
Here we go. Final question. Oh, Stevie, right up your alley. What do you miss about Christmas from your home country?
Oh,
the songs, obviously. The music. Everybody wishing you Merry Christmas.
No.
You don't miss anything. No. Of course you don't, because it's you. You hate holidays.
I don't hate holidays.
Yeah, you hate
happiness.
I just don't get caught up in it.
You hate people being happy all the time.
No, I just don't get caught up in it.
Which country does Christmas better, England or France, Jules?
It has to be France. I mean, in France, we celebrate on the 24th in the evening, in the night. You've got a family dinner as well there when it's all nice. In the UK, they go to bed at 11, or 10. They don't eat much because they know they're going to eat a lot on Christmas Day in itself. So it's not the same fun. So I'll take France.
Well, of course, you've got to go to bed at 10, 11, then Santa comes, then you get up, open your presents, then off you go for the day. That's the way it should be done, Jules.
You can celebrate on Christmas Eve as well.
Oh, man.
Jack, what do you miss?
The food.
Yeah?
We do really good food in Trinidad. Especially, well, we do a thing called pastels, which for me, with cornmeal and minced meat, it's incredible. And I miss that desperately.
Oh.
So I normally, whenever I go home, when I go home, my mum would order and I'd bring them up and we'd keep them in the freezer till Christmas. But of course, I haven't been able to go back to Trinidad for the last couple.
Oh, you have been the real victim of COVID, Jack.
Yeah. Me and my pastels.
Your pastels.
Me and my pastels.
You'll just forget.
What's that?
Well, they might start the 24th.
Right.
But in Britain, they do Boxing Day. So they actually have 2 days as well.
Okay.
So, I just sort of throw that out.
So?
Tell you what, you know what?
Hey, that'll teach you, Jules.
Hey, I'm trying to stick up for him, right? Okay. So what does he do? Hey? Tell you what, it's a good job.
That is it. We're done. Thank you very much. ESPN FC is back on your screens tomorrow. Stevie, you here?
Don't talk to me. That'd be nice.
We'll be reflecting what happened in the Champions League. And that'll be it.
Hey, I'm not watching your dog either.
All right, well, don't watch the dog. That's all right. That's fine.
Get that.
Eleanor watched the dog for me.
Oh, God.
You'd have to be involved.
Yeah, right.
Right. Cut it, Tommy. That's it. We're done.
God.
Put out the thing. That's it.
Oh, goodness me.
There it is.
Oh, God.